Chapter 8. Locusts and Darkness. After the hail, Pharaoh still refused to let God's people leave. So Moses threatened Pharaoh with locusts. Under the advisement of his servants, Pharaoh offered to let only the men of Israel leave Egypt and worship God. This was not sufficient for Moses in accordance with God's plan. So by the command of God, Moses stretched out his hand over the land of Egypt and brought locusts which covered the face of the whole ground so that the land was darkened. Then the locusts destroyed every herb of the land and all the fruit of the trees which the hail had left. Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron to forgive his sin and plead with the Lord so that the Lord would relieve him of the plague of locusts. Pharaoh described the plague as death. See Exodus 10:17. Moses heeded Pharaoh, went to the Lord, and spoke on Pharaoh's behalf. The Lord got rid of the locusts, but Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he did not let the children of Israel go. Once guys in here come to the reality that their once peaceful and carefree life is coming to a crash, they often hurry and run to God. I'm not excluded from the group, because I did the same thing. I have seen guys do all they could do concerning their situations, leaning unto their own understanding, and at the last minute, right before trial time, they turn to God. They join our prayer circle a couple of days before court, or come to me for intercessory prayer on their behalf. I don't see anything wrong with talking to God when we are in trouble. In fact, the Bible suggests that we do so. David, in a prayer, said to God, "In the day of my trouble I will call on you because you will answer me." Psalm 86:7. I see a problem if we talk to God only when we are in trouble, instead of at all times. We should talk to God morning, day, and night. We ought to consult with God before we make important decisions. We should thank him always, because he is always doing something. I think we should take all of our cares and needs to God, big and small. It is my understanding that we should stay in constant communication with God, talking, listening, waiting, and obeying. However, that's not the case with many folks. There is a young guy whom I met here in jail who goes by the name of Trill. 1.5 years ago, when I was not yet ministering the word as I am now, Trill and I were pretty close. We played checkers all the time. I taught him how to play chess, and I offered him advice about doing time in jail and prison. I invited Trill to group prayers some nights. Sometimes he accepted, sometimes he declined. I was not very patient then, so I was not persistent in getting him to join in prayer or attend church. Around the time of Trill's final steps in the court process, which involved plea deals and appearing in front of the judge to finalize the decision, Trill and I were not hanging out every day as we had been before. I was sort of upset that he had stopped coming to prayer call, and he didn't want to hear me always talking about it. I think his job in the kitchen played a role in his free time and daily activities, though. One day, Trill unexpectedly came to my cell and told me that he accepted an open plea. That's an agreement where the suspect pleads guilty before going in front of the judge to be sentenced by the judge. The sentence is determined in open court by the judge instead of predetermined by the district attorney in exchange for the suspect's guilty plea. Trill wanted us to pray about it together. We prayed, but he had already been sentenced to 15 years for burglary of an occupied dwelling. I felt terrible. Some of the guys used to refer to Trill as my son because we always spent time together, and I felt as though I had abandoned him at a very critical point in his life. If I had been aware of the plea offer, I would have prayed about it and advised him on what to do. As I helped him write letters to get back his job after being fired, I would have helped him put together a letter for the judge if the open plea was the best route to take. But instead, I failed him, and he's in prison now. I don't know how long Trill will be there because he never received a copy of the sentencing order so that I could read it. Trill didn't really understand what the judge had said, so he could not adequately explain the details to me. This was Trill's first felony conviction, so the punishment shouldn't have been so severe. I bear some of the blame because I did not maintain a good personal relationship with Trill and because I wasn't concerned enough about his welfare. Trill also has to bear blame because he did not maintain a good personal relationship with God. God could have used me to help if only the both of us were thinking of someone other than ourselves at the time. I sleep in a two-bed cell, alone, and at the time I was sleeping on the top bunk. The night that Trill brought the news to me about his case, he sneaked out of his cell after lockdown at 11 p.m. and hung out with me for the night, talking about his girlfriends and other things. All I could do was lend an ear and give my time. In the morning, the guard, Office Jones, said something about Trill being in an unauthorized area after lockdown time. I told him that we were just praying and stuff. Jones said It's too late for that. My reply was, it ain't never too late to pray. After the locusts were gone, God commanded Moses to stretch out his hands towards heaven so that there would be darkness over the land of Egypt. Moses did as the Lord said. Then there was darkness in all the land of Egypt for 3 days, so that none of the people could see each other and none came out of his place. In the land where the Israelites live, there was light. Pharaoh called for Moses and told him that all the people could leave Egypt to worship God, but they had to let their flocks and herds remain in Egypt. Moses explained this situation to Pharaoh, that the Israelites needed to leave with all their animals as well, but Pharaoh denied the request. Pharaoh demanded that Moses get out of his presence and threatened that Moses would die the next time he saw Pharaoh's face. Moses had a threat also after Pharaoh, from the Lord God of the Israelites. The Lord would go out at about midnight and cause all the firstborn of Egypt to die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh down to the firstborn of the servants, to the firstborn of the animals. He made it clear that none of the children of Israel would be harmed, neither man nor beast, nor would even a word be spoken against them. Moses then left Pharaoh's presence in great anger. Pharaoh still did not let the children of Israel go. On January 3, 2016, the day that I drove to the Riley County Police Department in Manhattan, Kansas, I got arrested and was taken into custody where I met Detective Calvin Sanders. Mr. Sanders had visited my auntie's house on the previous day, looking for me. At the station, Detective Sanders, a uniformed officer, and I went into a small room, and he handed me a piece of paper. I read the indictment for first-degree murder and said, "Okay, I gotta go back to Mississippi and testify." Detective Sanders responded to me, "No, you've been charged with murder." I told him, "Yeah, that's why I have to go back to Mississippi and go to court, so that I can clear my name." That was my first time ever meeting the man, and the night before was the first time I had ever heard of him. Little did I know, Detective Calvin Sanders already knew of me. I did not find out until I received my motion of discovery evidence, but Detective Sanders was leading an investigation against me for an assault charge. Apparently, an ex-girlfriend, whom I met while living in Manhattan, Kansas, told police that I choked her and threatened to do something worse to her. This supposedly took place in December 2014. Mr. Sanders' statement also said that this ex-girlfriend of mine made a statement about the murder of my wife. Detective Sanders said in his statement that there was no physical proof of me assaulting my ex-girlfriend, and that the recorder was not working when he presumably recorded her statement. This next part is a bit heinous, but I'll be honest about it. Tawana, the ex-girlfriend I'm talking about, was an attractive Haitian woman whom I met online after I moved to Kansas in 2014. On our first date near the end of October 2014, we drank, got high on Kush weed, and had unprotected sex. I was vulnerable at the time, so for 2 weeks straight, I stayed at her apartment before returning home for a day or two and then going right back to Tawana's house. A few more weeks later, she told me she was pregnant. I was okay with her having a baby. I wasn't thinking rationally. As time progressed, Tawana began acting sort of strange, like she had multiple personalities. She blamed it on her hormones. But Tawana had a best friend named Emily, who Tawana claimed always came to the house in my absence, but I never met Emily even once. I told Tawana that she should wait to have a baby and abort the one she was pregnant with. I know this sounds terrible, but my intentions were to break off the relationship after the abortion. By the beginning of February 2015, I had talked Tawana into aborting her baby. I had given her $500 for the procedure, and I had taken her to the clinic in Overland Park. I wasn't sorry about it then, but God Almighty in heaven knows that since I've been in here, I regret convincing Tawana to kill Isaiah. She was about 3 months pregnant, and I'm just as guilty of the abortion as she is, or maybe more guilty, since it was my idea. It wasn't long after the abortion that Tawana took some pills and was admitted into a treatment center. Now that I think about it, she ended up giving up her apartment and moving into a women's help home. I wasn't really concerned then, but I'm sorry that I caused so much in her life. Although I heard that she lied and told some guy that I beat her baby out of her, I hope she has forgiven me. As I sat in the Riley County Police Department in Manhattan, Kansas, awaiting my expedition back to Mississippi for murder, I began to seek God. I would pray with my palms up at mealtimes, in the morning, and at night before bed. I still did not know who Jesus was yet, but I knew that God was real and that I was going to need him for the situation I was in. I told the staff not to bring me any pork to eat, and I started reading the Holy Bible and committing scriptures to my memory. After 1 week in a one-bed jail cell, Detective Jerry Bankston and Officer Cook of the Greenwood Police Department came and picked me up in the Greenwood Police Department SUV. They then transported me to the LaFour County Jail here in Greenwood, Mississippi. During the ride back, Detective Bankston tried to make idle talk, but I had determined that she was no longer on my side as I had thought she was in the beginning. I only spoke when it was mandatory. I just looked out the window and prayed palms up, especially during Cook's turn to drive as he repeatedly straddled the median as he drove down the highway. "Oh God, please let me make it back safely," was my prayer. I was right to think that Detective Jerry Bankston was not on my side because my motion of discovery revealed other deceitfulness that had taken place. Aside from me being the only suspect under investigation, detectives had issued an order declaring me an extremely dangerous fugitive from the law. Since Bankston had given me permission to leave town, and since she assured my auntie in Kansas that I was not under arrest before my auntie opened her home to me, I thought that I was being considered as a victim who fled to safety. I was obviously wrong. By the grace of God, I was not stopped while driving in my car by police and treated as a dangerous, murderous fugitive on the run. Thank God that he allowed things to go the way they went. I think about how I could have easily been the victim of a hands-up, don't-shoot tragedy. This is just my opinion, but I think their plan was for me to do something outrageous and never make it back to court alive. God had other plans for me, though. I also think that the enemy's plan is for me to get into more trouble while I'm in jail and get sentenced to a lot of prison time. God has other plans for me, and the devil is a lie.